God, I think it's a death wish. Because when that gets out around South Carolina, every Baptist minister will enter a lottery to get to kill the kid.
Jesus, and say, you want to do what?
Son, that's so 2,000 years ago. Try something new.
Oh, that's classic. I like that.
Yeah. Oh, kid, please don't. Please don't. Yeah. Please don't. Please don't. If you do that, all the weirdos will be walking around with AK-47s hanging around their necks. We saw what happened with the cross.
Yeah. What was it? The Old Testament called and wants its crucifixion back or whatever. New Testament called.
Son, the Old Testament called. They want their religiously insane. You don't just come up with go to kill myself, die, go to heaven, and kill Jesus by yourself. Somewhere along the way, there has to be some pretty twisted doctrine getting poured your way. You know what I mean? Work with me real quick, and we'll wrap up. He's got to be one of these fundamentalist sects that says once saved, always saved. Okay.
Yeah, that goes.
Magic underwear. I get it.
Bingo. So even if he commits suicide, he's still saved. So therefore, he gets to go to heaven, where he reveals his nefarious plot. Fundy, 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 fundy. And the reason I brought this whole thing up was because I got an AFA action alert last week saying, is it time for us to take our fundamentalist children out of the public schools? They're dangerous. Look at this little heathen. When he probably comes from a fundy home in the first place.
That's right. A good point, Bob.
So we've done it to another hour. John, you've got a show to do.
Yep. We got Maggot Brain and probably David Fremaine ringing in today. We're going to talk about Funkadelic a bit.
Maggot Brain. Cool. Yum, yum. Under tooled leather.
Oh, it's some great guitar, man. It's
I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. Titling. It's all titling. Peter, have a wonderful night.
Thanks, kids. I enjoyed it.
John, we'll see you around the corner.
All right. See you, Peter.
And in the meantime, here's the late, great Lowell George reminding you to...
This is a top to what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see, the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, 11,
and most
11,
of the amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is that any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show, right here on the Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet. citynet.net. Be one louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome aboard Fox Up for the beginning of another week, whether it's Monday evening, Tuesday morning, or Tuesday afternoon, all depending on where you are on this beautiful blue marble, such that it is. And today is going to be a bit of a different kind of show. And Bob's telling me I'm being a bit clippy and dirty hit to him, so I'm going to see if I can fix that up a little bit. Hopefully that'll clear it up a little bit there, Bob. And so anyway, why is today different? Well, today's different because I want to pay a homage and honor to probably one of the greatest talents that has walked this earth in the last 100 years or so. In my mind, a gentleman by the name of Humphrey Littleton. Now, unless you're a fan of either listening to the BBC or are a huge jazz aficionado, you may not be very familiar with who Humphrey Littleton was. Now, Humph is an English institution. I don't think you could describe him in any other way. He's been part of English culture for, you know, since the 50s. Amazing jazz musician, composer, probably the most important jazz and most influential jazz musician in the UK. Had a huge hit, which we'll play a little bit later in the program, called Bad Penny Blues back in 1956, I believe it was. Just a much loved man. And if you go there, I've got a bunch of links up at today's show post, and if you go by the post of just open comments, you see people of every generation just talking about how much they love this guy. And I only discovered Humph a few years ago thanks to Gail. And I'm sorry I haven't a clue. The panel game that he chaired for since 1972 on Radio 4 became a regular weekend thing for us to listen to. And Humph may have just died on Friday, but he was just out doing gigs with his band just 2, 3, 4 weeks ago before going in for surgery. It was for an aortic aneurysm, and unfortunately, obviously, things weren't successful, and he passed on. And I'll read a little bit about Humph's biography and whatnot, but just to give you a taste first of what he was about, I've cut together some audio from some archives of I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, and the first bit of audio that I'm going to have Bob run is an edit of 3 or 4 introductions to the program where he always had this monologue that he opened the show with before he introduced the panel. And the panel were comedians. And this was a program where it was completely live in front of a crowd, you know, nothing fancy. We're talking, you know, a couple of tables with blokes and ladies, if so be the case, just behind microphones. And this guy just fired things at them, gave them what they, as they always described, as silly things to do, and made them really react on their toes. And this guy had a wit that was dry, clever, linguistically brilliant, and just razor sharp, just absolutely razor sharp. And so you know, there were a couple of shows recorded just a couple of months ago that have yet to air. So I mean, this guy is proof of that music and laughter keeps the brain young. So just to give you a taste, and the opening music of the show gives you an idea of the character of what you're about to experience. So go ahead and roll Clue intro edit, please, Bob.
We present I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, the antidote to panel games. At the piano is Colin Sell, and your chairman is Humphrey Littleton.
Hello and welcome to I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue. You join us this week at the Grand Opera House, Belfast. Belfast boasts a rich and diverse history, and the city has managed to survive troubled times with an air of optimism, recently being awarded status as European City of Commerce for its services to the balaclava industry. By the Middle Ages, the area around Belfast was noted for its manufacture of fine linen. Famous as the handkerchief capital of Europe, Belfast's linen mill proudly boasted that the world wiped its nose on their products, while the Newtonard's soft paper mill kept very quiet. During the Victorian era, many of the population emigrated to the USA, and Northern Ireland sent America no less than 10 presidents until the White House asked them to stop, as they already as they already had one. The nearby town of Killyleagh is noted as the birthplace of Sir Hans Sloane, the founder of the British Museum, although little of interest at his family's fine mansion remains after everything was stolen by the Egyptians. Very much a city of tradition, Belfast is famous for its marching season, when men in dark suits and bowler hats parade in tribute to the home pride flower graders. Famous names associated with Belfast include George Best. Once voted European Footballer of the Year, Best scored over 100 goals for Manchester United and represented Northern Ireland 37 times. So if you're listening, George, that's what you did. But the real Belfast of today is as much about ordinary folk that no one is ever likely to have heard of. Let's meet the teams.
At the piano is Colin Sell, and your chairman is Humphrey Littleton.
Hello and welcome to I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue. You join us this week at the Lowry Centre in Salford, part of the great metropolis of Manchester. The origins of Manchester lie in a Roman settlement founded by Julius Agricola. His fortified town was called Memusium, meaning a hill shaped like a breast. As Agricola boasted, he liked to name places after whatever he missed from home. However, he kept strangely quiet after founding the town of Ramsbottom. In 1485, Manchester figured heavily in the Wars of the Roses. Eventually, the dynasties known as the House of Lancaster and the House of York were united by Henry VII, who combined both into the House of Fraser. Peace reigned here until the Civil War, and royalist troops under Prince Rupert used the city as a base from which to attack nearby towns. He ordered the sacking of Bolton, when the entire town was reduced to a miserable pile of rubble. Later, funds were provided for reconstruction, and work is expected to start soon. The Manchester we recognise today only really appeared with the Industrial Revolution, when the city's population was housed in overcrowded slum dwellings. However, sanitary conditions were improved when pipelines were constructed to bring fresh water from the Lake District. These worked well until the 1960s, when one resident ran a bath and discovered Donald Campbell in it. The industrial labor movement was born in Manchester, eventually growing into the Trades Union Congress. So successful was the TUC that it was once honored by having a cheese biscuit named after it. The women's movement also started here with Emmeline Pankhurst and the Suffragettes, who toured with Billy J. Kramer and the Dakota. The most famous name associated with Salford is artist Ellis Lowry. A number of his famous matchstick paintings are displayed here in the Lowry Centre. Approximate contents, 49. The TV antiques expert David Dickinson spent his formative years in Manchester. Dickinson has since left, as he says he didn't like the constant rain. It makes him go streaky. Another famous Mancunian is Judy Finnegan, who presents TV shows with husband Richard Madeley. She claimed a certain notoriety when, at an award ceremony, her blouse fell off, allowing everything to spill out. Ever the professional, Madeley carried on, bravely ignoring the pain of his broken toes. But Richard Madeley isn't alone in having to witness embarrassing disasters. Let me introduce the teams.
All right, this gives you a taste of There were moments during Clue that I don't know if I've ever laughed quite as hard, and that's even forgiving some of the local English things that I might not get. There was something about the pace and the language used, and that just made the show such a joy to listen to. I mean, the fastest half hour. I mean, we talk about the horn section being quick, but this 30 minutes would just shoot by. But it wasn't just limited to things English. They dealt with everything international, and there was plenty of time spent on George W. Bush. And this is from a program, I think, back in 2002. I'm not exactly sure. This is a game in the show based around the panel finishing Bush quotes. So this is just hysterical stuff, and the comics are even saying, you know, how do we compete with the real thing, because the real thing is just so ridiculous. So we'll just move straight on. So go ahead and run Bush quotes, Bob.
Our next round is dedicated to the U.S. president. George W. Bush is the elected leader of the world's only superpower, controller of the world's most influential economic infrastructure, and supreme commander of the largest nuclear weapons-equipped military force on the planet. You couldn't make it up, could you? But then, according to a Gallup poll, 3.7 million of the American electorate believe they've been abducted and interrogated by aliens, presumably with the question, what were you thinking? Teams, I brought along a selection of incomplete quotations from speeches made by President Bush, which I'd like you to finish off. Okay, Graham, we'll start with you. His first quotation was delivered in Saginaw, Michigan, while attempting to prove his environmental credentials.
In the Pacific Northwest, I have made it clear to the citizens up there, I oppose breaching those dams. I know the human being and fish can...
can legally marry in France.
Here's what he actually said.
I oppose breaching those dams. I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
How can we possibly top him?
Okay, your turn, Tim. This remark by George W. Bush was made in Washington on January the 11th, 2001.
We'll make America where we want it to be. A literate country and
a country where people can read and write.
as well.
Here's what he actually said.
We'll make America where we want it to be. A literate country and a hopeful country.
I've got a headache.
Don't blame you. You now, Jeremy, here's a part of a quote by George W. from a campaign speech in Iowa.
We cannot let terrorists and rogue nations hold this nation hostile or hold...
or hold the baby after the bathwater has bolted.
That was fantastic play, Jeremy. I love you, Jeremy.
Here's what he actually said.
We cannot let terrorists and rogue nations hold this nation hostile or hold our allies hostile.
I don't understand why he declared war on tourists. And Barry, another remark made by the president at a press conference.
See, without the tax relief package, there would have been a deficit. But there wouldn't have been the commensurate
nurse.
Here's what he actually said.
The kick to our economy.
It's not even his second language.
Okay, here are some for any of you to have a go at. Here he is again with some remarks said at a press conference from the Rose Garden of the White House.
You know, let me talk about Al-Qaeda just for a second. I made the statement that we're dismantling senior management, and we are. Our people have done a really good job of hauling in a lot of the key operators. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Abu Zubaydah,
Mahmoud Indigo, Shake, Rattle and Roll, Yes Sir, That's My Baby, and Salim Dion.
Here's what he actually said.
Our people have done a really good job of hauling in a lot of the key operators. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Abu Zubaydah, Ramzi Al-Sheeb, or whatever the guy's name was.
And finally, here's George W. after meeting with a special envoy to Iraq in the Oval Office.
The ambassador and the general were briefing me on the vast majority of Iraqis want to live in a peaceful, free world. And we will find these people. And
disillusion them.
Here's what he actually said.
A vast majority of Iraqis want to live in a peaceful, free world. And we will find these people. And we will bring them to justice.
Comics trying to keep up with the lunacy of George W. Bush. And I totally forgot. I meant to... You heard that little computer voice that popped up? That was actually left over from a previous sketch or previous game that they played utilizing GPS devices. And so the voice kind of continued on taking part in the show. So if you're wondering what that was all about. I'm going to read just a little bit from the obituary of Humphrey Littleton. It was really good to see everybody in the chat room just kind of laughing about this, because, I mean, I just think this man created some of the funniest moments I have ever heard in radio. And I was kind of amazed at how much I felt like I lost a friend, you know. And I don't even have the decades of listening to this man that other people did. So from the BBC's obituary, say Humphrey Littleton was perhaps the UK's most influential jazz performer. Beyond this, he was a noted raconteur and wit and chairman of BBC Radio 4's long-running I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue. He was the unlikeliest of jazzmen, born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He was schooled at Eton and commissioned in the Grenadier Guards. Yet Humphrey Littleton, Hump to his many friends and fans, was also a lifelong socialist and a performer and composer whose commitment to his music shone through for more than half a century. And to the younger generation, he was the avuncular and razor-witted chairman of I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, who more than held his own with comedians including Tim Brooke Taylor, the late Willie Rushton, and Barry Cryer, two of those gentlemen you've heard in those clips. Humphrey Littleton was born in 1921, and his father was a housemaster at Eton. Both of his parents were amateur musicians and began playing the trumpet in 1936, forming a school quartet a year later. On one occasion, when he should have been watching the school's annual cricket match against Harrow at Lord's, he was in London's Charing Cross Road buying a trumpet. His long-running love of making music had begun, although on leaving school he worked for a time in the steelworks in South Wales. He was commissioned in the Grenadier Guards during World War II and saw action, most notably on the beach at Salemo. But it was said that he arrived on the beachhead with a revolver in one hand and a trumpet in the other. By 1948, he had formed a band with clarinetist Wally Fox. That year, he went to France's Nice Jazz Festival, where he met his idol, fellow musician Louis Armstrong. Armstrong always spoke warmly of the man he called that cat in England who swings his ass off. And with that, I'm going to move on to the next bit of audio, because one of the games played on the show on a regular basis, is, and this is obviously from probably one of Hump's ideas, was a game called One Song to the Tune of Another, and it's exactly what it is, taking the lyrics of one song and singing them to the melody of another. And I've got a complete segment here. The first two are funny. The second two will kill you. So with that, One Song to the Tune of Another from I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue. Roll it, Bob.
Okay. Oh. The teams are going to sing for us now in the round called One Song to the Tune of Another. Musical accompaniment in this round will be provided at the piano by Colin Sell. Actually, listeners may be fascinated to learn that before Christmas, Colin was employed to play the piano for the Stranglers. You can imagine how things were livened up in their turkey abattoir. Okay, Barry, we'll start with you. I'd like you to sing the words of Going to the Zoo to the tune of You'll Never Walk Alone.
Daddy's taking us to the zoo tomorrow. The zoo tomorrow, the zoo tomorrow. Daddy's taking us to the zoo tomorrow. We can stay all day. We're going to the zoo. Zoo, zoo, how about you? You, 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 you can come too. Two, 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 we're going to the zoo. We're going to the zoo. Zoo, 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 zoo. We're going to the zoo. We're going to the zoo.
Tim, now I'd like you to sing the words of the Marrow Song to the tune of I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing.
Down the road there lives a man I'd like you all to know. He grew a great big marrow for the local flower show. When the story got around, they came from far and wide. And when the people saw the marrow, everybody cried. Oh, what a beautiful... beauty. I've never seen one as big as that before. Oh, what a beauty. It must be 2 feet long or even more. It's such a lovely colour and nice and round and fat. I never thought a marrow could grow as big as that.
Right, you now, Graham, I'd like you to sing the words of the Eensy Weensy Spider to the tune of the chorus of the Hebrew Slaves from Verdi's Nabucco.
The Eensy Weensy Spider crawled up the water spout. Down came the rain and washed the spider out. Out came the sun and dried up all the rain. And the Eensy Weensy Spider crawled up the spout again.
Finally, Tony, would you please sing the words of Girlfriend in a Coma by the Smiths to the tune of Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
Girlfriend in a coma, I know, that is serious. So girlfriend in a coma, I know. Really serious. There were times when I could have murdered her, but I would hate anything to happen to her. Do you really think she'll pull through? Do you really think she'll pull through? Oh, girlfriend. Yes, she's serious. My baby.
Now, that is exactly what is meant by how they said, you know, being given silly things to do. And that's what the show was. It was about, and I mean, these comics just had to be ready to go, ready to go, ready to go. And just some amazing talents. And these are just guys, all these guys are just absolutely a riot. and they can give Barry Cryer such hell. So with that, we'll actually move into a little bit of his serious music. Now, this song, Bad Penny Blues, is this is a great little track. Recorded in 1956, if memory serves me correctly. Engineered by the legendary Joe Meeks. And this is the track that puts English jazz on the map. And not only did he host I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, but on BBC Two, he hosted a weekly jazz show. So he was almost, he was fundamental in bringing English jazz musicians out into the open. So, I mean, this guy just loved art. He just loved art. And, you know, I just think it's great. So, Kickback, this is a great, it's like 3.5 minutes. And listen to the piano player on this track. It's absolutely fantastic. So without further ado, today's track of the day, Bad Penny Blues, the Humphrey Littleton Trio, I think it was, for this number. Roll it, Bob. Thank you. Now you can see why Louis Armstrong said he could swing his ass off. It's just a great tune. And a bit of trivia. The piano in this song is what Paul McCartney styled the piano part for Lady Madonna after. And you can hear it. Bob even picked it off in our little production chat. He goes, "Oh, this reminds me of Lady Madonna." And I'm like, "Ah, now that you mention it, that's a little bit of trivia involved with that as well." So, okay. The guy was truly an amazing talent. And, you know, if you go to the BBC website and just search Humph or go to my show post for today, you'll be able to find links to a page where just, you know, the public was able to say their last goodbyes. And it's amazing, you know, 17-year-old kids saying, you know, how much they loved him, you know, and growing up and hearing, you know, Radio 4 on in the kitchen, and that "I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue" was one of those shows that an entire family could listen to and just buckle over laughing. And I mean, if that's your life's legacy, you are a winner in my mind. If that, you know, if you've given, you know, four or five or more generations joy and escape, I would reckon you have to believe you've lived a wonderful life. Now, some of the silliness that went on in "I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue." Now, in the show, there was the scorekeeper, Samantha. Now, as far as I know, Samantha didn't actually exist. She was just referenced to in a bit of Colin Sell's piano work, and that was about it. Aside from, Samantha came into the dialogue of Humphs throughout the show, and there were two specific spots towards the end of the show where reoccurring themes of Samantha would come in. And one thing that Humph was the genius at was the double entendre, and never actually saying anything dirty, but letting the listener's mind go to the dirty part. And it's some of the most memorable stuff. So I've put together a few of the Samantha bits all together, and then running into a segment that this particular part of the show would normally lead into, to give you an example of another one of the games that they play. So go ahead and roll the clip named Samantha, Bob.
Actually, I notice it's very nearly the end of the show, but there's just time left for a round of Grumpy Songbook. Samantha tells me she has to nip off to meet her new gentleman friend, who's been ringing her all day in a grumpy mood. Despite being very busy, Samantha says she can always find time to handle his testy calls. She's attending to that, I'd like you please, teams, to suggest titles of songs likely to suit a grumpy audience. Graham, will you start, please?
Hey, you, get off my cloud.
Sorry.
Strangers in the night, I've got me shotgun.
Tim.
I want a whiter shade of pale.
Jack.
I don't like Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays.
Once, twice, three times to the lavvy.
Supercalifragilistic, oh. Expialidocious, my arse.
My arse, you say? My corns and bunions have never been worse. I'm frail, I've got bladder problems and bad breath. I'm super callous, fragile, cystic, exhaling halitosis.
Yes, it's very nearly the end of the show, but there's just time to squeeze in a round of Fisherman's Theatre Club. Samantha has to leave us now. She's off out for a lovely meal with a new chef friend who's laying on a traditional shellfish evening. She says she's really looking forward to enjoying his special cockle night. So, teams, while she's away preparing for that, I'll ask you please to suggest titles of plays, musicals and other stage shows likely to appeal to an audience of fishermen. Graham, will you start, please?
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dabs.
It's going to be a performance of Swan Hake starring Dame Celia Kampf.
Calamari Jane.
Very popular with anglers is Half a Sixpence, because it contains the hit number Flash Bang Scallops What a Pilcher.
Well, I notice it's very nearly the end of the show, but it's just time to squeeze in a... shut up. But it's just time to squeeze in a round of Aristocrat's Songbook.
Thank you, my lord.
Samantha tells me she has to nip out now, as she's been invited to an exclusive club to meet a group of aristocrats. She's very excited to see where all the big knobs hang out. She says at such a posh function, she and the other girls will probably end up trying to speak with plums in their mouths. So while she's away preparing for that, teams, I'd like you to suggest titles of songs that might appeal to an audience drawn from the upper crust. Graham, will you start, please?
Our house is a very, very, very big house.
Pass the Duchess on the left-hand side.
Yes, I am a rich man. With a title, 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 too.
Play that flunky music, you boy.
It's very nearly the end of the show, but there's just time to fit in a round of Smokers Book Club. Samantha has to nip out now, as she likes to smoke fine cigars. Obviously, smokers are banished from inside buildings these days. So she's off out the back to enjoy a hand-rubbed Cuban in a doorway. So while she's away doing that, I'd like the teams to suggest titles of books likely to suit a readership of smokers. You can start this one, Jeremy.
Great Expectorations.
Tim?
A Tale of Two Siggies.
Harry?
On Her Majesty's Senior Service.
Graham?
The Da Vinci Cough.
Silas Marlborough.
20,000 Fags Under the Sea. Angela's Ashtray. The Spy Who Came In for a Fag. Tinker Tailor Soldier Ashtray.
Cat Stand Full Strength's Mandolin.
A Curious Incident of the Dog End in the Night.
Eats Cheroots and Leaves.
I, Claudius, am having a fag.
Well, that's the end of the show.
Harry Pothead and the Philosopher's Bong. By J.K. Rollups.
I'm sorry. I can't. Editing this stuff today and having gone through some of it last night, it's still hysterically funny. Harry Pothead and the Philosopher's Bomb. You gotta love that. I'm so glad to watch the reaction in the chat room that you all find this as hysterical as I do. I just think it's just genius. Now, the last bit of audio that I've got together is a little bit of montage of the end of the show, which would have followed the segment that you just heard a montage of. And this is where they'll play kind of a final game, and there is the recurring theme of Samantha in most shows. So, again, listen close for the double entendres. You probably can't miss them, but just some of the funniest stuff that's ever been done, and the world is a less happy place without Humphrey Littleton in it, but it's a much happier place because he was here. We'll just go ahead and run the goodbye segment. Roll that, Bob.
So, ladies and gentlemen, as this edition of the show draws to a close, I'm required to assure our listeners that no animals were harmed in the making of this program. Until now, that is. And so, from the team, Samantha, myself, and the good folk of Dartford, it's goodbye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as the fluffy newborn chick of hope tumbles from the eggshell of life and splashes into the hot frying pan of doom, I notice it's the end of the show. So from the team, Samantha and myself, and the good folk of Belfast, it's goodbye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to end the show. If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in this show, please write to the BBC Help Desk, Broadcasting House, London, taking care to mark your envelope, basket case. And with that, from the team, Samantha, myself, and the good folk of Salford, it's goodbye. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as the housewife of time adjusts her lipstick in the mirror of destiny, and the cyclist of fate disappears under her speeding 4x4. It's time to end the show. So from myself, Samantha, the teams, and the fine folk of Ipswich, it's goodbye.
Fryer, Graham Garvin, Jeremy Hardy and Kimbra Taylor will be given silly things to do by Humphrey Littleton, with Colin Sell setting some of them to music. The programme consultant was Ian Pattinson, and the producer was John Naismith.
So there you go, your crash course in Humphrey Littleton, and I'm sorry I haven't a clue. I still think, absolutely hands down, possibly the greatest ever comedy radio program that I ever heard. And the fact that it ran consistently from 1972 all the way up until just a few weeks ago is just statement to the amazing life and dedication that Mr. Littleton had to just being who he was and trying to make the world a little bit of a nicer, happier, funnier place to be. And an interesting thing is I referred to him actually in the blog post as Sir Humphrey Littleton. That's actually not correct. He turned down a knighthood, and I wonder if that was from his socialist views that he just couldn't quite take that kind of an honor with a straight face. I'm not sure what the reasons were behind that, but yes, he was offered a knighthood, and he said, no thanks, which I would think would even endear him more so to the folks that probably knew him best. And, you know, there were folks at the BBC page with the open comments, their little have your say section, which within a few short hours had, you know, over 1,000 comments. And I think it's up to like 1,600 or 1,700 at the moment. And just countless people saying how, you know, only 4 weeks ago they went to a taping of Clue or had seen his band play, and he was still in top form. His band had a residency in a particular club for some 48 years, I think they said. And one manager who had been there for 26 of them said he had never missed a concert, never saw him off his game, and never saw him angry. He was always smiling, laughing, and happy. And I find that an amazing achievement. In this painful, gross, evil, confusing world, you know, is music and laughter truly the best medicine? And I think it is. I think it is. And, you know, the people's comments of just how, you know, he was a sweet and lovable guy, and, you know, was always there to talk to the fans. And, you know, at 86 years old, still writing that show every week, while doing the jazz program, while still going out and playing actual live gigs with his band. I mean, there are folks half his age that would have keeled over trying to do half of that. And, you know, there's discussions on whether the show should continue and have one of the regulars, because the guys like Barry Cryer and whatnot had been on the program for decades, really. And, you know, should one of them take over? Some people say that it should just be buried in his honor. I don't know. I think I think if one of the people that was on that show on a regular basis thought that they could do it any justice, in his honor, I think the show should continue. However, you probably wouldn't be able to, it wouldn't be hard to get me to agree to the fact that it should just be put away. You know, it was him, that was it, it'll never be the same. And I understand those arguments. But, you know, people in the UK are going to be really lost for what to do on a Monday night for a while, I think. And I'm telling you, Gail and I put on a couple of the CDs last night, and I was going through looking for these clips. And when we went to bed, I said, should I just leave it running? And she's like, oh, yeah, it's hard to turn off. And the one thing that I knew is that we would never fall asleep with this stuff running. We just sat in bed for an hour and a half, just sitting there, just laughing hysterically. That one song to the tune of another, that Smith's one, just about killed me. So yeah, it's you know, have a Google search. You can go and check out some video of Humph at humphreylittleton.com. All the links are at my show post from today. And you know, I know I've mentioned Clue and Humph before, but I, like many, kind of assumed that, you know, he had been given a pass on mortality, that he was always going to be around. But I have to say that, you know, the BBC is fairly organized, and I kind of got to know when the seasons would start and when the seasons would end. And I have to say I got a little tinge of worry when I saw that I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue hadn't quite popped up yet this calendar year. And there you go, you know, one of those things, you know, a great run comes to an end. As many people said, talk about having a great innings. Talk about having a great innings. You know, he composed over 120 pieces of music. He played with Radiohead on their 2001 album. All the I can't remember the name of the track, but there's this jazz kind of trumpet thing during a bit of a crazy musical interlude section. That's Humph's band. And Humph knew nothing about Radiohead, but Radiohead knew all about Humph. So they had to get him. And even Humph said he didn't understand the song after he had recorded it. But hey, that didn't matter. He wanted to be part of things. He wanted to be part of life. He wanted to be part of art. He wanted to be part of love and laughter. And there are rare times when true genius comes at the right time with the right spirit. And I wonder if, you know, Humph was a man of, say, 20 or 30 now, if that style and that wit and that dry sense of humor would even be given a look. And is it because did he last so long because he had already become an institution by the modern age? I don't know. It's something that I've been thinking about. You know, would he really have been as big if he had come up, say, 10 years later, 20 years later? I don't know. But anyway, a true pro, and there's a whole bunch of people at the BBC that I think are just kind of got to be in a bit of a fog of, you know, what now? What now? After, you know, 36 years of an institution, and then suddenly, poof, gone. So, thankfully, you know, there are recordings so that you can hold on to these things. And even though, you know, some of the subject matter would be topical, in general, the shows weren't so topical that they'll become dated. I think, you know, I mean, these shows that I pulled here from were probably 6 years old, 7 years old, but it all still worked because it was intelligent, live stuff, you know. If you go to Humphrey's personal site and you check out, there's a couple of videos of shootings of Clue, and you can see it's, you know, three tables with skirts on them, two panelists at the right table, two panelists at the left table, and Humphrey in the middle. Microphones, bottles of water, that was it. Do you think, you don't need budget for that. You need talent and brains. Talent, brains, and the ability to go out and take the risk, because the whole thing was live. You know, they recorded as live, maybe edited it down for length, but what aired pretty much was what it was. And I just think that's just fantastic stuff. So I, for one, amongst millions out there, will miss tuning in to Humphrey on Clue, but I am very thankful to have been able to enjoy his work over the last few years, and I can understand how crushed some people are that he is now gone. So with that, we're going to wrap up tonight. Thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing tonight. Thanks to Ben Birch of the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archive. Thanks to CRMW.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. You too can be part of the solution against mountaintop removal mining. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat.